Amen. Great. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And it's funny, I have to, whenever anybody calls for that, the Serenity Prayer twice, I literally have to not only practice restraint of pen and tongue, but eye rolls, right? It's all I can do not to just roll my eyes when that comes up. So I'm actually as surprised as you are that I asked for that. But I found out yesterday that I had to work this morning. And so so I was rushing here, and despite the fact I don't have a badge, rest assured, I'm registered. I registered when it was still very inexpensive to register. So I'll do that on one of the breaks in case anybody's nervous about that. But I just... And then there was a line in the bathroom, and I wanted to pull rank. You know, I'm leading a workshop. And I thought, no, keep your mouth shut. You know, this is so on you, right? If you're late, your people will understand and be compassionate. So thank you. I apologize. This really isn't my style to kind of, you know, rush in like this and be a little harried. And I always kind of wonder, as I was looking in the mirror in the bathroom, I thought, you know, I wonder if kind of this hair, kind of pulling it up, is kind of got the cute little, oh, that's such a cute look, or like, oh, it's so tragic, I think she doesn't have a hairbrush look, you know? I don't know. I do have a hairbrush. It's supposed to be the cute look, but I'm not sure it worked. We'll see. That might also get addressed on a break. But I'm really glad to be here. My name is Sheila. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, everyone. And we are going to, we're actually going to be talking about some of the things that I've already actually alluded to, right? Taking responsibility and apologies and how that ends up showing up in terms of love and forgiveness, right? And what we're going to do here, we'll take a break about halfway through, a break at 3:30. And if somebody is kind of, you know, prone to watching clocks and kind of wants to, you know, kind of give me a heads up when we're getting close to that, I'll pull out my phone, and I'm pretty good at kind of paying attention to the time as well. But we will take, you know, most definitely, you can rest assured there will be a 10-minute break at 3:30. And obviously, if you need to leave, or this isn't calling you, or whatever, you know, this is your weekend, and it is your responsibility and your to your delight, right, to make sure that you are being fulfilled and sustained here, and that you're getting what you came for, right? And it will not hurt my feelings at all. So, you know, do whatever makes sense to you. I love having you here, and if this doesn't work for you, or it's not calling you now, or we are probably, my guess is, going to get into kind of some heavy stuff, and if it just feels too much, then, you know, take care of yourself. That is your, you know, your highest responsibility, right, to take care of yourself. So, you know, use the restroom at will. Get, I guess, the refreshments. There aren't too many refreshments to get, but... It's funny, I teach middle school part-time, and so I have a bunch of, it was end of term, and we're starting a new term next week, so, you know, on the last class, I always bring, you know, schlock, right? And I have leftover stuff in my car, and for a split second, I thought, oh, bring it in. Oh, no. No, don't bring it in, right? But at any rate, so, you know, take care of yourselves at will. But again, we'll do a planned break at 3:30. And then, we have, I guess there's an ask it basket here. So on, you know, come up and at various points we're going to be doing writing, and I'll tell you how we're going to, you know, how this is going to play out, but you can write little questions at some point, you know, toward the end. I'll hit questions in the ask it basket, and, you know, we can also do questions. And again, I'm not quite sure how this works. Usually, I thought there might be someone here, so I don't know if you have to sign off on a form, or perhaps we've all signed off, or you've all signed off when you registered. I have not, you know, picked up my stuff. But at any rate, so however that works, if we take questions and you go on the mic, make sure that, because I think we're recording this. Again, I'm not sure. How is this being recorded? Does somebody know? It is, right? Okay, good. Just want to be clear, because in terms of when I get to some of the stories and stuff. All right, so we are here, and we're going to be talking about love and forgiveness. And do not for a moment think that 12-step programs, in my mind, are anything other than an exploration and a journey about love and forgiveness. And the reality is, right, that's great, I've at least got one person who agrees because she's nodding her head, bless you, thank you, right? You're always just looking for one, right? Like at least one. But, you know, the whole deal is, you know, when you think about the 12th step in service, and the reason that I think they get us into service so quickly right away is because service actually requires love and forgiveness. We might not know that, but it actually is calling for it right from the beginning. And it's only when you really kind of get going in this and you are on this wonderful journey that you see that that's really the whole game. It is the whole deal. It's what a four-step is all about. It's what making amends are all about. And And it's very, very exciting. So this is on love and forgiveness. We are going to be focusing specifically on the fourth step and the eighth step and the ninth step. And this was a big book workshop. If you have your big book, that's cool. And if you don't, it doesn't matter. I'm going to just reference a few pages and I'll read anything that needs to be read. But that's what we're going to be looking at here. And I'm going to take about 20 minutes. Is there somebody who's got an iPhone who'd be willing to be a timer? That's great. Thank you. Pretty woman with the pretty. Oh, your hair's so pretty. My goodness. That's lovely. Great. So if you would give me. Oh, yeah, you're so kind. 15 and 5, please. Yep. So I'm going to share. I'm just going to tell you my story for 20 minutes. And then we are going to launch into this in terms of what my struggle was with love and forgiveness and how I needed to get moving right away. I will spend a lot of time on my feet. I have kind of a trick knee. So, at various points I will need to sit down. Does that thing move? I don't know. I don't think so. But, at any rate, so I will spend as much of my time as I can on my feet. But when I sit, it's only because I need to take care of myself. But, I'm going to spend, 20 minutes telling you my story, and then we're going to get into this. And what I imagine is going to happen is we are going to start talking in yen, and you can start that timer now. What I imagine is going to happen is that we are going to have somebody come up here who is going to share about something that they are struggling to forgive, right? And usually, I always used to call it the three M's, but then somebody else had brought something else. So mothers, molestation. Maybe it was always, there's another one. But then there's a third one. I always used to say the three M's, right? Mothers, molestation, I'll get the other thing. That might have been it, except that's good. Now that's a fifth one, actually. But no, I'll think of it. And I don't like to work from notes, so that's why I don't have things in front of me. It's always kind of more interesting and more fresh. But mothers and molestation are certainly a big thing. But I was at one of these things doing one of these one time, and somebody said, I've got another M. And I said, what's that? And she said, murder. And I said, okay, yeah, no, that could definitely be a struggle. And she shared that she'd had a brother who was murdered and had struggled with, forgiving the person, that her family had gone through the whole court thing. Okay, so I am 52 years old. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 28 years on Valentine's Day, and I'd been sober for about 3 months. I've been sober in AA for 28 years, and I was sober for about 3 months, and I turned to a woman next to me, and this all happened in the Midwest, and I said, do you think people can have a problem with sugar like you have a problem with alcohol? She said, absolutely. Go to Overeaters Anonymous. And I did. And if I had taken the direction I got in that first meeting, I actually wouldn't have ended up on the path that I was on, because I went into a wonderful OA meeting in the Midwest. There were about four people in the room. I remember she was a beautiful African-American woman, and she had a doctorate in accounting, which I just thought was so cool. I had just finished college. It took me 7 years to do an undergraduate degree. So I was just very impressed that somebody had a doctorate. And she was warm and lovely and had a healthy body weight. And I said, well, how does this whole abstinence thing work? And again, I was sober for 3 months, so I had a sense of, what you did there, right? But I wasn't clear about this abstinence business. And she said, well, do you have a problem food? Is there something that gives you trouble? And I said, sugar, absolutely. And she said, well, do you think it would be possible for you to put down sugar and eat three meals today? And I told her that I had not eaten a meal that day yet, despite the fact it was a late morning meeting, right? But I was going to OA. I figured, well, that must be how this works, right? You don't eat. So, and she said, do you think you could not eat sugar and just do three meals today? And I said, well, I'm not sure. Now, I'm going to go ahead and give her credit for this, though I don't remember the conversation continuing into sponsorship and step work. However, it doesn't matter even if that didn't happen, because again, I had 3 months in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a sponsor. I came in and I loved it right away. Hi, Sandy. I loved it right away, right from the beginning. And I signed up. So I got a sponsor. I was doing the deal. So even if she and I hadn't had that conversation, I knew how this worked and I knew what my responsibilities would have been, right? And that's a really important thing to remember, is my responsibilities. And I left there. I went and I had a meal at a restaurant. And it was a meal that I really enjoyed, and I was used to kind of having that meal in the middle of the night. It was a Denny's restaurant, and it was, whatever, they have. And I just had never had that meal in a reasonable way where it was just kind of a, oh, this is breakfast and let's do it. It was kind of, we're getting out of the bars. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. We're hammered. Let's, you know, descend on the Denny's, right? And do cause trouble there and eat there, right? It was always that kind of a thing. And I remember I finished that meal and really enjoyed it and it felt great. And I thought, no sugar, 3 meals a day. That's what this lovely woman just said to me. And I went out to my car. I sat there and I thought about it. And then I thought more, and I thought more, which is trouble, and I said to myself, no, it's got to be more complicated than that. And I proceeded to complicate it for the next dozen years, right? I did, because I could not take that direction. I couldn't. And that was actually stellar direction, right? It really was. But I couldn't, and I proceeded to complicate it. And I struggled. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps, again, because I knew how that worked. And I loved 12-step programs right from the beginning. But I just simply wasn't done with the sugar. Sugar was my thing. It has never stopped being my thing. I don't eat it. I haven't had sugar in almost 12 years. But I have 15 years of absence. We'll talk about that. But I always say, if you would have lined up a bottle of tequila, a joint, a line of cocaine, a carton of Marlboro Greens, and a hot fudge sundae, I would have run to the hot fudge sundae. I still would. Hands down. Hands down. Just always, right? And that's just always been my thing. Sugar's always been my thing. But it took me a long time. I simply wasn't done. I wasn't done. And we're going to talk about that a lot, too, right? I wasn't done. And what does done mean? Done means I wasn't ready to feel the feelings that come up when you put down the food, stop the behavior, start eating if you're an anorexic, stop vomiting if you're a bulimic, right? Stop the exercise, business, bulimia, whatever. I don't know. Is that? I guess that's real, but I'm not sure. It just seems like that's a California thing. I got to tell you, I never hear exercise bulimia outside of Southern California. But at any rate, what do I know? Zero. But at any rate, it's when you stop the behavior, feelings are going to come up. And I just wasn't ready to feel the feelings. That's just the reality. I wasn't ready to feel the feelings. So I could not stop the sugar consumption. I couldn't. And so I came in around 200 pounds. And I'm going to talk numbers. Numbers aren't that interesting, but it just gives you some kind of an idea where we're at in terms of what my ability was and my willingness was to feel the feelings. Right now I just was at the doctor and, I weigh about 140. I'm on antibiotics for a UTI, right? Too much information, probably. But at any rate, because I don't have a scale. And so normally my weight is closer to about 136. At any rate, so I'm about 140. And I came in and, was directed to start working the steps regardless of whether I put the food down or not. Right? Okay, that's also an important thing, but we'll probably get to that later, but that is actually corroborated in this book, right? It's on page 30 and 31, because I've had people kind of give me cheeky phone calls, actually, and say things, really, fairly, doesn't happen often, but somebody said something really unkind once about my lack of recovery and how little I knew about the program, because I actually am a strong proponent of working the steps regardless of whether you get out of the food, if you're done with the food, right? And it just was what I was directed to do by my sponsor, so that was why I sponsored people that way, and that was why I did it. And then I wandered into a meeting about 3 months ago, and they were in this book, and which is cool. It's wonderful material. I read it, more than a few times in the beginning, but it's right there. It's in the midst of the four step. And it says, we think it's a good idea as a general rule that you've put down the food before you start a four step. But if you haven't and you feel called to doing a four step, do a four step. Because what we've found is working the steps sometimes helps somebody to stop the behavior, right? So the first sponsor I had in Overeaters Anonymous, and I do not argue with sponsors or cops, right? And my sponsor told me to work the steps despite the fact coming in at 200 pounds, I wasn't done with the sugar and just couldn't even fathom the idea of not eating sugar, right? I don't think I even got through that first day when I went to that OA meeting. My guess is that I had sugar later that day, right? Because it's a big deal. It was a big deal for me to put down sugar. And And I just wasn't ready for it. You know, in my first 3 months of sobriety, I remember sitting in meetings, kind of looking around at people who'd come in when I did, and they were, you know, bouncing off the walls and, you know, really kind of bumbling around. And I was just sitting in the back thinking, wow, they must not be as spiritual as me, as I'm reaching for the donuts, right, which are in the back of the meeting. I mean, I literally thought that, right? The hubris. And because I was just leaning into my real drug of choice, which was sugar, right? But at any rate, so I started working the steps at my sponsor's direction, and I got sober and ended up in OA in the Midwest, and we are largely influenced by the Alcoholics Anonymous of Bob Smith from Ohio, and again, from Michigan. And Bob's theory was that you go through the steps over and over and over again. And he talks about that in his book, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, right? In contrast to Bill and the New York cohort, who said, you go through the steps one time, and then you cycle through 10, 11, and 12. Now, Bill kind of backs off that in AA Comes of Age. I just actually finished that book. It took me like a year to read it. I don't know why. I just kept putting it down, but it's a wonderful work, you know, if you're interested at all in kind of the history of AA. And he actually backs off that idea, and he realizes how valuable it is to do multiple four steps. But at any rate, so I had a sponsor, and we were cycling through the steps. So now I'm about 2 years into OA, right? And at this point, I've lost 20 pounds. So I'm still not abstinent because I have decided with my sponsor that since sugar is a problem, not eating sugar must be what my abstinence should be. And I hadn't put down the sugar, but I was working the steps. And obviously something was happening because I've lost 20 pounds, right? Something has shifted. I'm 26 years old, 26, 27, I guess, 26. And I've lost 20 pounds. So something has changed. And I went to a family event, and there were three. I'm the youngest of five. My oldest brother is deceased. He died of diabetes at 36. And in addition to his diabetes, like me, he had a sugar addiction, right? A raging one. My mother also died of diabetes. She got diagnosed with the less serious diabetes. Surprise. You know, wink, wink. What a joke. She got diagnosed at 66 and was dead at 68. In the same way, died in a hospital with both of her legs amputated, just like my brother, my 36-year-old brother. So diabetes runs rampant in my family. I had a 9-year-old niece who was diagnosed with diabetes as well. But so it's a, you know, it's a big, there's a lot of autoimmune surprises in my family. At any rate, so I was at a family event, and my dad had always hassled my sisters and I about our weight, but I was the youngest, I was the heaviest, and I was also the most sensitive. I was a fairly easy target. And so he, you know, there were unkind comments. Many of us heard, you know, similar things from parents and family and friends and stuff over the years. But my dad would say really hurtful stuff to me, and I was at a family event. So again, now I'm about 180 pounds, 2 years in, keeping in mind that it wasn't the weight loss that is indicating my recovery. It was the step work, right? Don't ever forget that, and I'm sure you won't, right? That's the whole deal. But I was at this event. It was a big family event, and my dad would always make comments, and he didn't make those comments privately. It wasn't like he pulled you aside. He would make them in front of people, right? That additional component of shame. Shame was a big part of my story. I was also molested when I was a kid, so that's huge, and that will figure into what we're going to be talking about later in terms of forgiveness, four steps, amends, etc. But I walked by my father, and he said, well, it's obvious you've lost some weight, but you've got a lot more work to do. Don't let up. And I turned around and I said, no more. That's it. It's over. You do not talk to me about my body anymore. It's over. And everybody kind of got quiet because nobody was used to anybody talking to my dad that way, right? And my father, to his credit, never spoke to me about my weight again. And 2 years later, when I ended up in an eating disorder unit here in Southern California, my father showed up and took responsibility, right? And got in the middle of a circle with a bunch of angry women, right? and a few angry men, too. I mean, there was a judge there, I remember, you know, male judge. And, you know, took responsibility as people were telling him, you know, how hurtful that had been, what he'd done, right? But he took responsibility. But so that was why it really made sense to me, not only because I was taking sponsor direction and working the steps, but I knew then that that was recovery, right? Nobody could tell me that wasn't recovery, that I could finally stand up to this man who should have loved me not only, I don't even want to say regardless of what I weighed, it shouldn't even be a part of the conversation what I weigh. That has nothing to do with who I am as a person. It has nothing to do with any of it, right? For any of us. It's nonsense. So I mean, it's comical to even say, but it shouldn't have figured into the conversation, but it did. You do a lot of damage. And I have no doubt, I have wonderful male friends and men that I've sponsored and stuff, because I sponsor men in this program and in the other one, because I work with chronic slippers exclusively. But, you know, I know that there's a lot of damage if a parent is unkind to a son. I know that, you know, male or female. But I gotta tell you, as a woman, when your daddy communicates to you that you don't have value because of what you weigh, the damage is just profound. And it often gets linked up with promiscuity. I used to work for a psychiatrist. I mean, there are some of these things are kind of textbook things, right? There's a direct correlation. So, and that certainly, you know, that certainly was part of my story, right? But at any rate, I was very clear then that this was working. Despite the fact I hadn't put down the sugar, I was going to, very good. So I have 5 minutes and now set it for another 15, actually. I'm sure it's going to take longer to finish this story. So, but it's good. No, it's going to be, it's important because it's going to weigh into what we're talking about. So we'll see. I'll take whatever. Let me know when we've got five and then we'll see where we're going from there. But I knew that this was working and I was continuing to take my sponsor's direction and work the steps, right? And the weight slowly started coming down, but I would bounce between, again, the numbers aren't interesting, but it's just giving you an idea where we're going here. I would bounce between like 160 and 175. I would lose and gain 15 pounds about 3-4 times a year. Well, that's 90 to 120 pounds a year, right? So despite the fact I'm not a 100-pounder, I had a registered dietitian have me track it once. I have lost and gained, it's more fun if I know the exact number, but I don't. But I've lost and gained over 1,600 pounds over the years, right? Because, again, that was my thing. I would just keep going like this. That was my deal. And again, I just kept following sponsor direction. I didn't have the same sponsor the whole time, but you know, water rises to its own level. I seemed to attract people who this made sense to them. This whole idea, just keep working the steps. You'll stop when you're ready. And, my husband and I had put down sugar. Because I would kind of go in and out of sugar. I think the longest I went in that period of that 10-year period was about 9 months. But I'd put down sugar just at, my birthday is the 3 days before Halloween, and you know, that's my Super Bowl holiday, right? So then I put down sugar a few weeks after Halloween and got through Thanksgiving, got through Christmas, got through New Year's. I mean, I got through that very difficult holiday season without having eaten sugar, right? And it was January 13th, it was a Tuesday night. So now it's been, you know, almost 2 months that I've been off sugar. And my husband, he's now my husband, he was my boyfriend for a long time and fiance for even longer. We were engaged for almost 10 years, right? I'm not kidding, 9.5 years. And I was just afraid. And of people would say, gosh, that's a long engagement. What are you afraid of? I'd say, what do you got, right? I'm afraid of everything. And because I didn't mature as a child, right? There wasn't a lot of maturing. There wasn't a lot of evolving. And, you know, it was an alcoholic home. Not my parents, but grandparents. So my parents were wounded birds. I mean, there just wasn't a lot of, you know, growth. So I had a lot of fears. But my husband had been on this ride with me at that point for, you know, 10 years, kind of, you know, in and out, seeing how this goes, right? And I was off for a couple of months. We go to dinner. We go to this fancy restaurant. And we're doing a late dinner. And who knows what happened? I have no idea what happened. It's just like it talks about in the book, right? It's like all of a sudden you decide, I think I'm going to throw some whiskey in a glass of milk, right? I have no idea where it came from. I just know, who knows, maybe the waiter looked at me cross-eyed. I'm not sure. But I know I was finishing my dinner, and I decided I was going to have dessert, right? And so I said to my husband, I think I'm going to have dessert. Let's share a dessert. And my husband, you know, grabs the table, like, okay, right? Because he knows the ride we're about to go on. He just knows, right? He so knows. So we order a dessert, and we decide we're going to, you know, I decide that we're going to get one dessert, and we're going to share it. And I'm going to pretend I'm one of those Hollywood-type women, right, who can share a dessert with my husband or boyfriend, whatever he was, who cares, right? Put the dessert down, right? And we both have utensils, right? But I don't know why I need that, right? Just dig it in. Just set it down, right? But we're sharing, except the problem is my husband is eating twice as much as I am, and I know because I'm counting bites. So I'm counting my bites, and I'm counting his bites, right? Better than Lumosity, right? Counting my husband's bites and my bites at the same time. So now we've got a problem because I'm back in the sugar. I've been off for 2 months. All the feelings and everything that have been held at bay for the last 2 months are now rushing up. I have to get out of here, and I need more sugar immediately, right? I need more. We've got to get out of here. We've got to get out of here. And we're sharing, you know, some ridiculous dessert, you know, and it's, oh, it's, you know, looks so beautiful. It's nonsense, right? I got to get more sugar. So it's, you know, waiter, check, check, you know, like, it's like, let's get out of here. I've got to get out of here. And we're walking to the car, and I just know the run that I'm going to go on. And I'm already planning the lie that I'm going to tell my husband because I have to get more sugar. And I've got to get it immediately. So now it's like 11 o'clock at night. We're walking to the car. My husband doesn't like the valet park, you know. So I'm already planning the lie. And I think, okay, you know what? Very good. So said it again. And I think I know I'll just tell him that, I'll tell him that I've got to go to the store and I've got to get tampons, right? I've started my period and I got to get tampons. And I think, okay, but I'm going to have to explain why I waited until we got home before I realized, oh, shoot, I got to go get the tampons, right? And then I'm going to have another lie because I got to explain why I feel the need to send my husband in to take care of the dog, but I'm going to run to the store at 11:30 at night now because I'm going to get tampons when I've got a very evolved husband who, you know, he knows right where to go and he knows, you know, get the OB, right? He knows how this goes. And so I got to have that lie planned. And then I'm thinking, and I wonder, is he going to remember I just finished my period about a week ago, you know? Shoot. And I know, sis. Right? Ovarian cysts. I'll tell him that, you know, it's some kind of, I don't know, honey, don't ask me. And then, you know, when he's kind of looking at me with the quizzical face and saying, well, honey, still let me do it. And I'll be like, you know, we're not sure it's cysts. It could be cancer. I'm not sure. It's just, you know what? I actually need the alone time. Could you just go take care of the dogs, honey, please? I got this. Can you just, right? I've already planned that. I got this all planned out. I know exactly how this is going to go. And he will buy it. I'm a writer. This is what I do. I make up stories. I know how to do this stuff. I'm not a great actress, but I'm good enough for him. I know how to get him out of a car. And I'm planning that. This is how it's going to go. And it's been 10 years. 10 years of working the steps, right? Honesty, open-minded, and willingness, right? Kind of missing out on that honesty part, I guess. But my hand touches the handle of the door, right? As I'm already thinking, like, let's go with this. And when my hand touched it, I can still remember, I thought, wow, I'm glad I don't live in a high rise. I thought, God, where'd that thought come from? And I got it in that moment, what I had not gotten for the previous 10 years, because I was thinking I didn't have a bottom with sugar. And I got it finally in that moment that I could no longer guarantee that if I kept eating sugar, I couldn't guarantee that I wasn't going to one day take myself out of the game, that I wasn't going to one day kill myself. And in that moment, I got powerlessness over sugar. See, I'd never gotten it before. See, it was no big deal to me, right? To go between, you know, those weights and stuff and have lots of sizes in my closet. I don't have a problem with that. I'm at a steady weight and I've still got lots of sizes in my closets. It's nonsense. It depends, you know, on designers, countries of origin, etc., right? Who cares? I don't care what size I am. And my husband, right? I'm delirious, right? It's that dessert. It's talking about the dessert that's doing it, right? But my husband loved me no matter what I weigh. It was no big deal. If I lost weight, gained weight, if I was in the sugar, out of the sugar, it was somewhat manageable, right? Working the steps, loving people, being sponsored, sponsoring people, doing the deal. Wasn't a big deal. I thought, well, I'll just kind of, I guess this is how my life is going to go. In that moment, I got powerlessness, bless you. In that moment, I got it. I got that I couldn't guarantee if I kept doing this, I wasn't going to kill myself. And that really scared me. Right? So that was Tuesday the 12th of January. Tuesday the 13th. And what did I wake up the next day and do on the 14th? I had sugar again, right? Because I forgot, right? I forget often, right? So I got up and had sugar again. But the day after that, which was the 15th of January, the compulsion to eat sugar was removed, and that was in 2004. Now, what had happened 3 years before, and we'll talk about this as we are going to launch into our stuff here, is I'd had a pretty serious health diagnosis. I'd been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and that was in 1994. I was diagnosed and then undiagnosed and diagnosed again, and, you know, kind of had gone back and forth. It was some kind of autoimmune thing, right? But it was scary because I'd had an aunt who died of MS complications, and It was a big deal in our family, and I went. And my doctor said, well, I don't know anything about MS, but I know that there are things that would be better with diet. He said, so, you know, see a dietitian. I don't know anything about food. So I went to a dietitian. So I was seeing a dietitian professionally for a couple of years, and then I had a wonderful sponsor. Was that my timer again? Okay, good. Very good. So, right. Okay. Thank you. Right. ADD, right? That's me. But, so I'd gone, I started seeing this dietitian, and I had a wonderful sponsor that I was working with, somebody who really changed my life. Very good. And this will be the last one for sure. And concurrently, those two women in the same week, independently of each other, right? They'd watched me over the years, working the steps, doing the deal, being sponsored, sponsoring other people, you know, doing whatever we do here, going to lots of meetings. I've always gone to lots of meetings. I still do. I go to meetings 6, 7, 8 times a week. I mean, I just dig meetings, right? And I'm in 3 programs, Al-Anon, AA, and the food program. And, that always made sense to me to go to a lot of meetings. And these women had been watching me and yet still not letting myself have an abstinence date because I wasn't done with the sugar and I wasn't putting down the sugar. Why? Because I wasn't done. It's all it is. It's not about somebody's ornery or they're not willing or they're not whatever or fat abstinence or any of the hurtful, hurtful stuff that sometimes gets bandied about, even here, right? And I know because I work with chronic slippers, right? So just really hurtful stuff. Anyway, so these two women, independently of each other, both said in the same week, they said, you know what? I think you need to declare an abstinence date. And who knows? Maybe if you're going to put down the sugar and that's going to happen, that's going to happen. But you're 40 pounds down from your top weight. You've been here for a dozen years. Something is working for you. Something's working. Let's declare an abstinence date. So they did that for me. That was 3.5 years before I was done with the sugar. So my abstinence date is actually in 2000. And again, I don't argue with sponsors. And when I got that direction, you know, the dietitian telling me to do that, she's also somebody who's in program. So it, you know, meant a lot coming from her. But I pay attention to what my sponsor says. And my sponsor said, I want you to have an abstinence date. We're declaring this date. I'd met her at a meeting. I met her at that Light a Candle meeting, actually, on the Brentwood meeting. And she said, we're declaring it. It starts today, right? So that was what I did and continued to do the things. And then there was a little bit more of a weight loss. And then I had that occurrence, you know, 3 years later, where I got very, very clear that going in and out of sugar was going to kill me one day. It was going to kill me. And that compulsion got removed. And then I took off from there, and it's just gone from there. So that was what happened in terms of food and abstinence, right? So that's that part of the story. Again, because I have some health issues, I've always seen dietitians professionally. It's been really useful for doctors for them to know what I'm eating, so I'm a whammer. I weigh and measure my food. I don't weigh it if I'm out of my house. I certainly don't weigh it if I'm at anybody else's house. If I go to an event, I don't need to bring my own food. It's actually a really good exercise for me to find out what somebody's serving it's actually never been an issue. And again, I, you know, celebrate people that do that. I just listened to somebody sharing this about going to a Thanksgiving event and bringing her own food. And, you know, good for you. Terrific. Do your thing, whatever you've got to do. But it's actually very easy for me to eat. It is. And, but there's a lot of things that I can eat. Big categories of food. It's not that interesting, but, you know, see me on a break if you want to hear. Again, it's not that interesting. But, you know, I need to pay attention to what I eat so that I have accurate information to convey to healthcare professionals, okay? So now let's talk about the step work, because the reason that I could even get to that point where I had a weight loss happening and had the willingness to even be in a relationship when I was so afraid and keep hanging in and attract a lovely enough man who was willing to stay with me through a 9.5 year engagement and to be married to a woman who was molested, you know, ours has not always been a happy, joyous and free sex life. You know, I am a blessedly troubled woman in that regard, right? That's just the reality. Again, I have two other sisters. My oldest sister was molested. She's actually an anorexic. And then I had, you know, my struggles with eating. My middle sister was not. She's a normie. She actually had a diabetes scare about 6 months ago. Her doctor said, you know, I think you're heading into the, you know, I don't know what it's called, para-diabetes. I don't know. No, that's perimenopause. I'm not sure. I don't know. There's some precursor to diabetes. And he had a conversation with her, and she said, oh, and she got petrified again, all the diabetes in my family, and said, what do I do? And he said, well, you know, stop doing A, B, and C. She walked out of that office and stopped doing A, B, and C and lost 35 pounds, has maintained it, and it's no big deal, and she doesn't miss sugar at all, right? So she could do that. I can't. I have an eating disorder. So I need what you have to teach me. I need that healing, right? And it's, a lot of it is a result of that woundedness from what happened in my childhood. So I got to my four-step, my first four-step, and I had a sponsor, and we were working the steps as they were outlined in the book, right? So we're going to talk about this in terms of a four-step, a big book four-step, right? And do you guys have paper? Does everybody have paper? No? Okay. All right. Okay. See, again, I'm sorry. I didn't know quite how this was going. Do we have, is there anybody who is connected up, who's doing in a service position or something, who can get us paper, where we could have paper? Yeah, I don't think that'll cut it. All right. That's fine. Yeah. Would you? That would be great. If we, Ellie, that would be awesome. If we could get paper for everybody, that would be really, really cool. Here's a piece. Right? I feel like I should raffle it off. I think I should give it to the timer lady because she timed it. Anyway, here's a piece of paper. So we'll get, I'm just going to put it on this table. We'll get paper for everybody because that'll be really useful. Is we're going to talk about the four step, and there are three components to a big book four step. And again, the issue was never, despite the fact I talk numbers and weight and things like that, that was never my problem. It wasn't. It was never, ever my problem. Even when I weighed 200 pounds, when I was eating all the sugar I ate, and I ate copious amounts of sugar. I have a filling in just about every molar in my mouth, right? And I just ate. It was just incredible. My mother was an athlete, so I have a pretty fast metabolism. So, again, I could just eat really incredible amounts of sugar. But even when that was going on, that was never my problem. It was never my problem. Right? The same two problems I had when I came in with are the same things I wrestle with now to a much lesser extent. I do not love easily, and I do not forgive easily. Those are my issues. Those are absolutely my issues. I don't love easily, and I don't forgive easily. Right? So these things got addressed when I got introduced to my first four-step. Right? So there are three parts of a big book four-step. There's the resentment part, there is the fear inventory, and then there is the sex inventory. Yep. And when you are doing the resentment part, it's up for debate whether the same thing is true in terms of the sex inventory, but it's certainly true in terms of the resentment, that there are four columns. There are three columns that it shows on page 65, but on the following page on 67, in the prose is where it's outlining what is the fourth column of the inventory, right? And that is the real, that is the place where things are really going to change for you, right? It's because it's when I'm looking for my part. So I'm going to set this down, and I'm going to write here and show you until we get paper in here, but I'm just going to show you what we're going to be looking at in terms of a fourth column, four column, four step, okay? The resentment part. Okay. So again, in your big book, right, it starts on page 65. That's where it's looking. I mean, it actually starts talking about the four step at the bottom of 63. But on 65 is where it gives us the actual picture of what it is you're looking at. And if we get paper in here, you're all going to create this. Yay. Oh, terrific. Ellie, thank you. Thanks, Ellie. Okay. So here's how it's going to look. I'm going to hold this up in front. I'll show everybody, right? And whether or not you choose to do this on a piece of paper, right? Oh, thank you. Thank you, Perry. Oh, you're kind, Perry. Thank you. All right. So there are four columns to a big book inventory. So at the top, right? If you draw a line across the top and start making these four columns, and again, whether or not you actually do it in here, I hope that somebody will, particularly if there's anybody who's struggling with forgiving anybody of something, you're going to find this really, really useful. And I would invite you. And actually, I mean, Ellie went to the trouble to get the paper. I would actually do this if I were you, right? So there's actually four columns. The first column is, who do I resent? Second column is, what is the cause? The third column, we actually need seven spaces, right? And we're going to talk about the seven spaces that it references specifically from the book, both in the visual we have on page 65 and other things that it's talking about at the bottom of page 64. And I'll tell you what those things are. And then there is the fourth column. There are three things that we're going to be looking for in that fourth column. Okay? So set your paper up this way, right? And hopefully at least, and if you don't want to do it and you want to just observe, that's okay. But make sure that at least one person at your table is doing this. Just so that you can be looking over somebody's shoulder. Okay? In the third column, right? In the third column of the inventory, you need seven spaces. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In the fourth column, you need 3. Okay? So you need, and the cool thing is, it's actually cooler this way. I've had sponsors since who have sent, there's kind of stuff that's going around on the internet, and, you know, there are templates and things. The reality is those aren't even accurate templates, or at least I haven't seen one that's accurate. It's not how it's laid out in the book. And I'm not a purist about a lot of things, but the reality is I kind of love to pay attention to this in terms of exactly how it is in the book. And it doesn't matter. If you get a template from your sponsor and you're just checking boxes, that's cool. But in the beginning, I mean, you know, again, this all happened for me in 87, and so I did my first inventory then. You know, there wasn't this kind of stuff where, you know, you were sending stuff around on the internet. My sponsor did this very thing. I actually had to do it. And she said it's actually part of your four step to actually create the template for it, right? So it's I resent the cause, and you want to give yourself three lines. We're just going to be looking at three different things. Because what we can do in the room is everybody can do a little mini inventory. And whether you choose to do it with the template, I can walk you through it. You can still write down who you resent and what the cause is and how it's affecting you and, you know, in the different ways. And here are the ways you want to fill in those seven parts of the three columns. And again, this is exactly what it's clarifying on page 65 and at the bottom of 64 in prose. It's telling us to look for these seven things. Where do I get affected by this resentment? Okay? So there's three different things that happen in the fourth column, but seven ways that we get affected in the third column. Does it affect my self-esteem? So you're going to write self-esteem. Is the first one it talks about. The second one is, just draw a dollar sign. That's great. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Great. Good thinking. She's going to write it in. That's so terrific. Self-esteem. Yep. Dollar sign is the second one. Does it affect me financially? Right? Just write a dollar sign. Keep it simple. Third one. Did it affect my ambitions? So this resentment that I have, does it affect my ambitions? Whatever those ambitions are. Ambition to get married, ambition to succeed, ambition to make a lot of money, ambition to go to medical school, whatever it is, right? Ambitions. Fourth one, relationships. Does this resentment affect my relationships? And remember, you have a relationship with yourself, or ideally, right? So I don't know how that box ever doesn't get checked. Fifth one, sexually. Does that resentment affect me sexually? Sixth one, is it affecting my security? And seventh one, my pride. Again, these are all things that are specifically referenced in the book. And these are the only things that it's asking in the third column, does this resentment affect me in these areas? Okay? And what you can do, if you're following the direction on this, you can actually, and you're somebody who, you know, is good with all those, you know, different things to create templates and stuff. And this is how poor I am. I don't even know what to call it. I don't even know what the program is. Excel. Right? Yeah. What? Excel? Very good. So if you're somebody who knows how to do that, put one of these together, right? Send me one, for crying out loud. Put me out of my misery. Put you out of your misery. Okay, so that's the third column. So I resent the cause. and it affects me. So again, my sponsor had me do this, creating this template, because in the first inventory that I ever did, I've done other inventories where it was prose and it was a lot of writing, and I did lots and lots of writing of inventories. But my first inventory, she had me create a homemade template. We sat together at a coffee shop and I created, you know, pages of the template, and then she just had me going and checking boxes. Because it's not a lot. She talked about an inventory. She was a real purist, and she talked about how an inventory, if I'm taking inventory in a drugstore and I'm counting the Vaselines, I don't need to read the ingredient on the Vaseline container, right? I don't need to know how much glycerin or, you know, petroleum or whatever is in Vaseline. I don't need to know that stuff. All I need to know is, well, I got seven of them on the shelf, right? She said, that's what it is with a big book inventory. You are taking the story out of it. It's very, very powerful to take the story out of it, right? Because a story is doing one thing. And again, I'm right. This is what we're doing. We're trying to create emotion. You're trying to create a response. And you create a response behind emotion. And whenever I'm trying to create a response, an emotion, it's because I want you on my team, right? Because if you're on my team, I don't have to take responsibility. And he did it. It's his fault. And I'll tell you about a forgiveness thing. I'll tell you about a forgiveness victory I've had as a result of program. And I'll tell you about a forgiveness challenge that I'm in right now with my father-in-law. Right? So at any rate, so those are the seven things that you have in the third column. Right? Does it affect my self-esteem? Does it affect me financially? Does it affect my ambitions? Does it affect my relationships? Does it affect me sexually? Does it affect my security? And does it affect my pride? Okay, and there should be one more line here. So, and what you're looking for in the fourth column, fear, dishonesty, right? And, well, fear, self-seeking, right, selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. And self-seeking to me always just seems very, it's, yes, selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. You can just put them all. It doesn't matter. Selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. Again, the book also references self-seeking, but self-seeking seems like selfishness to me. They seem like synonyms. So I don't fool around with that, with sponsees. I say, look, if you get where you're self, I mean, what is selfishness? It's, I'm thinking about me. I'm putting myself first. So think about those three. It just simplifies it. Selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. That is my part. That's the fourth column. Thank you very much for doing that. That's the fourth column part that it talks about on page 67 that I'm looking for. And this will give me the keys to the kingdom when I find that part. Okay? So now, I've got this all set up with my sponsor, and again, we're just going to look at the resentment part, and we'll get to the fear thing, and the fear thing's much easier. And at any rate, so my sponsor, we put this in place, and now she sent me out to do an inventory, right? And again, this was my first inventory, and a big resentment that I had was that I'd been molested. I'd been molested by a family friend of ours, and that was a huge resentment for me. I was very, very angry. Really angry. And wasn't really conscious of that anger until I got in program, right? Because I started coming in meetings and listening to people, and I started thawing. My heart started opening, right? So I got angry. So clearly that, and we'll, let's just call him Joe. I'll just call him Joe for simplicity's sake. I resent Joe, the cause, molested me when I was 10, and it affected me in all these areas. And my sponsor told me when I was checking boxes on this, because she knew my history, she knew what we were going to be looking at. She said, just fill things in, right? Put check marks. No story. There was no story. No story. She'd heard about the story, right, in some of our communications over the months we were working together, but this was, she said, this isn't the place for stories. She said, so you would just put a check mark in places where it affects you. And she said, you do not need to put a check mark any place that you can't honestly put a check mark. And she said, especially remember that when you get to the fourth column. If you don't see a place to put a check mark and it doesn't make sense to you, don't do it. Right? And she said, because when you do your fifth step, we can talk about it. So that was really freeing for me, right, to hear that. So got molested, resent Joe, got molested, affected my self-esteem, Check. Did it affect me financially? I think so. Took me 7 years to do an undergraduate degree. I think so. I have no way of knowing that, but it certainly makes sense to me, right? I certainly wasn't going to do something that required a lot of courage and putting myself out in the limelight and really stepping out there and being really transparent and vulnerable and, you know, wasn't going to do that. No, I was the fat girl, right? Hanging out in the corner, right? I was afraid. So did it affect me financially? Yes. Did it affect my ambitions? Mm-hmm, for sure. Again, all those things, I had aspirations at one point in time. I had aspirations for, a singing career. You know, I was an opera person. I had ambitions for that, but no, that just got too frightening, right? So it affected my ambitions. Did it affect my relationships? Of course. It affected my relationship with every man on the planet, right? Every ex-boyfriend I had up to that point would cross the street if he saw me coming, right? And hopefully he's not going for a gun. I mean, I was a troubled young woman. I was very, very distressed. And I was angry. Plus I had a father picking on me about my weight and two brothers who weighed in because they mirrored their father's behavior, right? They learned, right? I was very angry. Very, very angry. And I didn't put on my weight until I went through puberty. I was a cheerleader in junior high. And when I was in the seventh grade, I was the one that went on top. So I must not have been too heavy, right? But I started menstruating when I was at the end of my eighth grade year, and all of a sudden the weight came on. And years later, when I worked for that psychiatrist I told you about, I worked for him for 5 years, and he said, that's textbook. That's classic, right? So that's very, very normal. So, yes, it definitely affected all my relationships. It affected me sexually, obviously, right? It affected my security. And did it affect my pride? I think so. Just my pride as a woman, and should have been safe, right? Should have felt good about myself and my body and shouldn't have been preyed upon, right, by somebody. I mean, it wasn't a fair fight. I was 10. He was 50, right? So I was real clear about that third column. That made sense to me. And then I got to the fourth column and I thought, what? Selfish, dishonest, fearful? Well, the fear I got. That made sense. That one I checked. I got it. Yes, I was afraid, right? That was my part. I walked away and I was very fearful. Okay, I'll do that, but this is foolish. No. So, and I had, you know, of course, other things on my inventory and stuff, but this was the big ticket item. And we're just looking at the big ticket item because if I can get that cleared, everything else was going to be manageable to deal with. But that was my big thing. Right. And I'd gotten a sense that that had been at that point. Again, I guess I was about 9 months in, 9-10 months in, but I'd gotten the sense that maybe this had something to do with why it took me so long to stop eating the sugar, not realizing I was still going to keep eating it for the next 11 years, right? This is a process. So it's wonderful to be in the process, but I've never had, you know, a healing where all of a sudden I can see, right? It didn't go like that, but it went like, okay, I'm afraid. And I'll open my eyes for a second, but I'm going to close them again, right? And I just kept doing this over the years until finally there was a shift. But it all started with that first one. It all started, and something started shifting, right? And I got to the fourth column, couldn't check anything, so then I finished the inventory, including the fear and the sex part, but we're just looking at this now, and sat down with my sponsor and read it to her, and I said, but I got to this part, and around Joe and what he did to me, I can't see this. And she was sitting across from me. She was lovely. We were at her house, and she was lovely and warm. And she said, now, Sheila, she said, you know that I really love you, right? You know that. And I said, yes, I knew that. And she said, you know that I know that this shouldn't have happened to you. Do you know that I know that this shouldn't have happened to you? I said, yes, I know that, right? I know that that's true, and you know that. It shouldn't have happened, and I know that you know that. She said, okay, great. She said, good. I want to make sure. She said, can we talk about the stuff in this fourth column? And I said, yeah, for sure. And she said, let's look at dishonesty. Can we look at dishonesty? And I said, okay, sure. And she said, is there anybody in the world who you hurt, who might be somebody that you did something bad to that you need forgiveness from? And I said, well, of course, right? And I had a checkered past. I was promiscuous. I had, yes, a resounding yes was the answer to that question. Yes, there were people whose forgiveness I needed. Stealing was a big part of my story. I'd stolen from my parents. I'd stolen from friends. I'd stolen from employers. Yes. And those aren't even the big ticket ones, right? Yes, there were people that needed to forgive me. I needed people's forgiveness. She said, okay. She said, can you see where it's dishonest for you when you want other people's forgiveness for stuff you've done? Can you see? And again, she was handling this all very, very gently and very lovingly. But she said, can you see where it's dishonest for you to not forgive Joe when there are people that you want to have forgive you? And I got that one, right? Again, it was presented very lovingly, but I got that. I was very, very, yeah, yeah. She said, do you feel like you could check the dishonesty? And I said, I do. And so I did. And she said, can we talk about selfish? And I said, yeah. And she said, and she leaned in closer, I remember, and she said, do you know that, you know, this horrible tragedy that happened to you, do you know what the statistic is for people with eating disorders? And I think she had a background, background in social work or something along those lines. And I said, no. And she quoted a figure. And I've since heard different numbers. I don't want to throw out numbers because I've heard different things. But let's just say the conservative number, I'll give you the most conservative one I've heard, 30% of people dealing with eating disorders experience some kind of sexual trauma. Again, we're not going to do a show of hands, though I do know this. I know I'm not the only one in this room who was molested. That I know. Right? So she said, can you see, she said, can you see where maybe it's selfish for you to kind of be carrying this around? She said, can you see that? I said, well, I'm not sure about that. She said, well, sex stuff aside, she said, we all know that there are starving children, men, women, children, right? The world over, right? There are tragedies the world over. There are horrible things going on right now, right? Women are being beaten. Women are being raped. Men are being beaten. Men are being raped, right? There are horrible things going on. She said, do you know that you're not the only one who's had something really horrible happen to you? And I said, yeah, of course I know that. She said, do you see where maybe it's selfish for you to kind of stay so present with that and talking about that so much and kind of keeping it at the forefront and making people pay the price, men pay the price, you pay the price, women pay the price, my mother pay the price, where were you, right? What am I doing in the back of this guy's Buick? Where's my mother, right? She said, can you see that? And I said, well, I think so, but I'm not completely sure. And she said, okay, well, let's try this one more time. And what she later told me is she says three things. She tries it three times with somebody. She said, because if they can't get it on the third time, they're not ready. And I'm not here to, you know, pull the pacifier out of the baby's mouth. But she said, what do you think selfish is? And I said, selfish is when I'm thinking about me. And she said, now, if you're only thinking about you, who are you not thinking of? And I said, well, I'm not thinking of other people. And she said, well, is it possible then that the selfishness with this is if you are so concentrated on what Joe did to you that you're not as available for other people? Would you agree with that? And I said, well, yeah, definitely. She said, I think that might be selfish. Does that sound selfish to you? And I said, yeah, no, I think it does. She said, can you check that box? And I did. And that first time I did that, despite the fact it was another 10 years before I put down the sugar, right, that was a game changer for me. That was a complete game changer. Because when we then ended up later, and if we have time, we'll come back and we'll talk about the two other parts of the big book inventory. But I want to make sure, I know we're 20 minutes away from our first break, and then I want to leave time in case, you know, people have some questions and stuff, and then we'll come back. Because I want to make sure we have plenty of time to both get to the eighth and ninth step, what we're going to talk about, and then leave the opportunity in case anybody wants to come up here who might be wrestling with a resentment. And remember, resentment is just a $2 word for I don't forgive you, asshole, right? That's all a resentment is. That's all a resentment is. So read that in the book. When it says resentment is the number one offender, you know, we don't fool around with that, right? Unjustified anger, justified or unjustified anger, we don't fool around with it. That's because what it is at its core, it's unforgiveness. And that, I don't think that's something that's exclusive to those of us in the rooms. I think it takes everybody out. I think a big cause of our distress in the world is a lack of love and forgiveness anyway. But at any rate, so, when I had those three places checked in the fourth column, and I saw that my not forgiving Joe for having molested me was selfish, dishonest, and fear-based, there was a measure of freedom, right? I got really free. So that later, right, in when I get to the eighth step on page 76 and it starts talking about it, and it says, I made my eight-step list when I took my four step, I was ready. I got it then. Yep, I'll get to you.
Did you cover fear?
No, we didn't do the fear and we didn't do the sex. Yep. And if we have time, we'll come back to it. Just want to make sure we kind of get to the whole component. Yep. Usually this actually works much better when I usually do this over a weekend and stuff, and we'll see. It depending, you know, I mean, we got a big room. I don't know if anybody's going to feel comfortable to get up here and talk about stuff. And if not, I'll tell you a couple of stories, and I've gotten permission from the people. They've been at retreats and stuff where I've done this, and stories that will just absolutely curl your hair. As people are wrestling with this and dealing with this, and again, these are chronic slippers, people who've been trying to get abstinent and surrender the food and the weight and stuff here for years, and then really were able to track it back and see that it was all connected up with someone that they weren't forgiving, right? In those big ticket places, right? Mothers, molestation, murder, men, though I think some of the men in the room would disagree with that, right? There's another one. Money, marriage, right? All of them, right? Maybe all the big ticket resentments start with an M. I don't know. We've got a pretty good list going. But it was money. That's it. Thank you. That's it. Right. So at any rate, once I checked these, I got free. So especially as we're heading into the break, get clear about this. Even if you don't want to fool around with this minutia here, you know, you can read this in the book. And maybe somebody will do it. If somebody is really into the Excel stuff and wants to put something together, if you email it to me, I can email it out to somebody who can disseminate it, Courtney or someone, you know, affiliated with the birthday party. We can get this out there. Because it is really cool when you just have these sheets. I mean, it's just made it so much easier. But as I said, I did remember what my sponsor said when she said, putting together the template is actually part of you doing the four step. It is work to get free. So don't be afraid of putting together a template. You know, she was saying things like that. But this was a big thing. When I saw my part, that I had a part. See, because you know how it says, and it says this myriad times in the book, and we just don't have time to you know, pull all these things out. But it says so many times in that book, it says, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but it says over and over again, you are basically going to have to turn yourself inside out here. If you want what we have and you want sustained recovery, right? You want to be, like it talks about six times in the book. It says, you know, this is the story of how thousands of men and women have recovered. What recovered means to me, why I'm not afraid, I don't say it because I'm not going to lead with the chin and it just inviting a conflict and it's inviting conversation, right? Before a meeting, after a meeting, in the midst of a meeting, right? To say I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Right? But the reason, what it means to me, recovered means that I get it. That my job, what you're telling me I got to do here, I got to forgive everybody of everything all the time. Right? And I'll tell you where I'm struggling with, you know, something. With my father-in-law. You know, we'll talk if we have time later. I want to hear from you and what your stuff is. You've heard enough of my story. But I'll tell you, I'm really struggling with something. And I don't need to do it perfectly. Just like I didn't need to wait to start an abstinence until I put the sugar down when I wasn't done. I didn't have to do that. What I had to do was follow direction. So I have done what my sponsor has asked me to do around my father-in-law and will continue to do it. I'm not there yet. I've been praying for him, all that stuff. But I have some stuff going on, right? And you would, too, if I told you what he did. I'm telling you, it's terrible. I'll just tell you, I went there for the holidays, and within 24 hours, my husband and I flew to Florida. My father-in-law kicked me out of the house. He did, because I had come back late from the grocery store. And the reason I came back late from the grocery store, didn't want to try and explain this to him, but somebody had called me in trauma on an outreach call, and I was a half an hour in an outreach call in a parking lot. And I came back late, and he kicked me out of the house, right? So I went to a resort community 3 hours away, an hour away for 3 days, and vacationed because my husband didn't come with me. I know. I wish I had that recorded because my husband doesn't think it's a big, because we're kind of struggling with that in couples therapy. But the point is, right? Yeah, you're right. Thank you. I will play that for him. Thank you. But But what's all that? I want to create a story because I want my husband to be, I want to be, you should have done this and this is the whole thing. This is everything that we're talking about right here. But I do not get to not, and certainly I, of course I'm going to, be forgiving. And I got to be in it with my husband. My husband was traumatized. It's not an easy thing, right? It wasn't easy for him either. It was a horrible, horrible thing. But my point is, that's what this stuff is. The whole morass of relationships and connections with people and this and that, it's all messy, messy business. And so what I always did is said, I don't want anything to do with it. Pass the M&Ms. Right? Pass the Milky Ways, pass the caramels, pass something, anything, just nothing with nuts, right? I don't want to chew when I'm binging. I want to suck and swallow, right? Oh my God, this just turned into an X-rated workshop, right? Did you see all the men in the room? They're like paying attention, like. Doi. Anyway, so. My point is, and there's something that just feels so glorious about this, to really be in it, right? To get it that, we never arrive and it's all just a process. This is why I love going through the steps over and over again. And I'm right in it. I got this ribeye with a bone in it, this father-in-law of mine, right? And I'm going to chew on that. And I am going to work this thing through. And I will do whatever my sponsor tells me to do. I will do whatever I am directed to do. Right? Because I want to be free. It's not about wanting to be a size whatever. That's very uninteresting. It is. And the transformation that happened in my body is the least interesting transformation, right? The idea that my husband didn't come with me and I love him and of course we'll work through this and it's no big deal. And I get it that it's no big deal. There's a big part of me that understands that why he didn't come with me. He was afraid. He was traumatized. He's trying to build a relationship with his dying father. I get it, right? But I was the girl who didn't want to get married for 10 years because I didn't know that I had the tools to be a grown-up in a marriage. Well, you know what I saw? I see through this, I have the tools to be in a marriage. Because what do you have to do? You have to be able to forgive. You got to be able to think of somebody besides yourself. I didn't know how to do that when I came here. That is so much more interesting than being a size whatever. Right? That's what I came for. That is so what I came for. Right? That's the deal. Here's where it happened. This is right where it happened. This is where it began. It all starts there. And it all starts with that fourth column. It's so important for me to see in every single instance, where am I fearful, where am I selfish, and where am I dishonest? So let's just look at it with my father-in-law. I'm afraid. I'm afraid he doesn't love me. I'm afraid there's something wrong with me and I'm highly kick-outable, right? I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid that I am disposable. Right? Where am I dishonest? Have I ever done something stupid? Because it was a stupid thing that he did. Yes, I've done stupid things. I've done stupid things today. Right? It might very well be this hairdo is stupid. Right? I've done stupid things. Is it selfish? It is selfish. Because it's all about me, and he hurt me, and he shouldn't have done this, and it was wrong. And those are true. It's true. It was hurtful, it was unkind, and it was probably wrong. But I'm not the only one in the picture. And he's 89 years old, and he's probably losing it. And he was already a clinical narcissist. Right? So the reality is, perhaps I... needed to pay more attention and have different expectations of somebody who's a very troubled man. And he's probably dying. I don't know. his, yeah. And I have baggage with him anyway. I have for a long time. His wife died, a year and a half ago, and I do some comedy writing, and I'd written a bit, and I said that, my mother-in-law died, 2 months ago, and, it's sad. It's very sad. But the tragedy is not that my mother-in-law died. The tragedy is that my father-in-law didn't. Right? I know. Well, see, good. See, okay. Usually that gets a laugh. Uh-oh. Tough crowd. All right. But my point is, right? Right? I know. And Dennis is there with his arms. He's got his arms crossed. Like, that's not funny. That is so not funny. But you get it? Are you getting it that I have baggage around this man? Do you really trust me if I give you a story and want you to feel sorry for me? I so loved it. You have no idea how many times I'm going to replay that collective groan in the room when I told you, right? I am going to play that for my husband at some point, right? Because my husband doesn't get it. But maybe I'm the one who didn't get it. Maybe I'm missing something, right? Like, I'm already going to be different when I go home because of this conversation, because you didn't laugh at the joke. Maybe it's not that funny. You know what I mean? But, yeah, I mean, comedy's tricky anyway. You know, it was just a joke. I don't really mean it. I don't really mean it, right? But the point is, this is a game changer. This really saves me. It does. Because it makes it all not about me. Instead, it's about Ellie and me, right? It's about us and Perry and me. And she has a perspective that's as valuable and as important as my perspective. And sometimes I do stupid things. Do I really want to judge somebody who did something stupid? Yes. You're so cute. That's so cute. That's funny, Perry. You're so cute. Perry said that. Perry, that's pretty lady right in the front. Right. No, it's so funny. No, she's right. We all said it. No, we all thought it. Of course, Perry. Are you kidding? Yes, of course. There is a part of me that really wants to do it. That does, right? And, I've got people outside of the rooms who will get on that bandwagon with me. I talked to a girlfriend of mine that night when I was packing up, right, to leave, because I tried to talk him out of this for a half an hour, and he wouldn't let me do it. Finally, I said, well, can I leave tomorrow when it's light? And he said, okay, but be out early, right? So I'm in my room packing, and I ended up calling a girlfriend of mine after I talked to my therapist and a sponsor. Sponsors, talked to two of them. Right? And I talked to a girlfriend and she said, oh my God, and your husband's not going with you? Are you going to stay married to him? And I said, yeah, right? And she's been like divorced like 3 times. But I mean, of course, right? Yes. But that's a very grown up thing. 20 years ago, that wouldn't have been the answer, right? So you taught me that. You taught me how to be a grown up, how to think of the other. This process teaches me how to think of the other. It is inherently selfish for me to not forgive anybody of anything. Because the only way I cannot forgive you is because I've made it all about me and my pain. He might not feel it, but my guess is that to be a father-in-law who is kicking out your daughter-in-law is probably painful. That's just my guess. I know when I'm a wingnut, being hurtful to people, I find it very painful. Right? And it's inherently dishonest for me to not forgive anybody of anything. Why? Because I want forgiveness. Right? And it's all about the fear. You see why they say that fear causes more problems than anything. Because I'm afraid. It's very vulnerable to forgive people when they've done something hurtful to you. Kind of feels like, gosh, is this how it's going to go? I'm going to have to do this for the rest of my life? Yes. Right? And what do I get? I get free. I get to be free. Exactly. But I get to be free. I want to be free. And as within, so without, right? Do the work, transform on the inside. It can't help but show up on my body. But it doesn't work backwards. I can't do what my sister does. I can't go into a doctor's office and have a doctor say, don't do A, B, and C, and walk out, oh, I'm not going to do A, B, and C. I go out and I do A squared, B squared, C squared. I do. I've done it, right? Maybe I'm not the only one. Right? So this is a big deal here, because that was never my problem. It was my solution. It was this anxiety, right? That all got really calmed down here as I did this. So that's where we are at. We've got a break in 5 minutes. Do we want to take any questions before we take our 10-minute break? Does anybody have any questions, or did anything go in the basket? Nope. Oh, okay. Very good. So we'll pass that for later so this can go around. Okay. Great. But does anybody have a question? Anybody want to throw anything out? And I'll just give you my 2 cents. Yep, sure. So she's talking about, and I'll repeat the question.
Something big.
Yep.
But what about small things?
Oh. Yeah. Can you give me a specific? Because I'll be honest with you. I mean, in that I can, she's asking about, you know, what about kind of a more day-to-day resentment, it sounds like. You know, kind of just, you know, a little mishigas, right? A little gremlin moment. But I got to tell you, once I got clear about how this worked, this happens instantaneously now. I got somebody who worked for me, came to my wedding, and was taking care of my dogs while my husband and I were on our honeymoon, embezzled from me and stole from us. And while I was on my honeymoon, and when I was part of a police sting and caught her, all I could think about as I was driving when she was, you know, on her way to being arrested, all I could think was that I loved her and forgave her. And I couldn't wait to hug her and tell her that I wasn't ever going to have her in my house again. Right. Couldn't refer her to the 6 people from my wedding who wanted to hire her. She was an organizer. Right. And a declutterer. That's a good job for a thief. I'll tell you what. That's a good job. Because most of the time you're working, I don't fit in this category, but most of the time you're working for very wealthy people who have a lot of stuff that they're not, you know, they can't keep track of. Again, that is not my experience. But she still wanted, you know, my schlock. But my point is, like, I forgave her immediately. So this is in my DNA. So what are you talking about? You got to help me.
Well, okay, somebody will that work.
What's your name?
Barbara.
Okay. And Barbara, you obviously mean business. You're sitting in the front. You got a question. And you're going to... I know, but you're going to go on the ride with me, right? Raise your hand if you would appreciate, if you were having people coming over to your house, if somebody sent out an email and directed people to tell people what to bring to your event. If you would be grateful if you had somebody coming to your house. My point is, right? Good point. Look, we can dissect this. My point is, and I know you get this, right? It's an individual thing. It's all about this. It obviously didn't work for you. And nobody's doing this wrong. I was just trying to point out, right? It's the same thing when I told my, you know, apparently not funny joke about, you know, the stuff with my mother-in-law and stuff. It's been very healing for me in the rooms to have other perspectives from people based on the response of people in the rooms, right? So I was just letting you know, I hear you, and I'm sorry that happened, and I really get it. I do. Well, no, I actually don't get it. I would love it if somebody, you know, took control at my house. But it doesn't matter what I get. It bothered you. What did your sponsor say? I'm curious.
Well, it's when you do this.
No, I hear you. No, I hear you. It's always the big, I mean, it is. I understand what you're saying about this. It oftentimes is the little things that trip me up, right? I always say, I can drop a transmission on the 405 in 5 o'clock traffic and I'm fine, but break a shoelace and somebody's going down, right? So I get that. I do get it. I do get it on the little things. I do. Well, in that it's January 16th and you're still in conversation about this. No, I know, but my point is, and no, Bambina, my point is, you said, well, I don't talk to my sponsor about this kind of stuff. And again, not my business, so not my business. Not my business. You might want to talk about this. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, see, because like I said, it's the little things that get me. It is. It's the little things. So, you know, I don't know. You obviously mean business. Like I said, you're sitting in front, you're paying attention, right? She's like, "Well, I'm out after the break. I'm done, right?" But I don't know what you should do, but
it's just this is something that you can.
Sure. Sure you can. Sure you can. No, and I do a 4-step. I do at least one 4-step a year, cuz again, I'm in 3 different programs and I, even if a sponsor doesn't, you know, have me do a big book one, I'll go to one of my long-term sponsors and I'll say, "Can I do a big book inventory?" Right, and they'll be like, "Sure, right, pull it out." So yeah, it is really powerful for me to look at this and just see. But again, I just love to think about this. You know, this is a big thing. The reality is I'm selfish and I forget and I'm dishonest, right? And I forget that you are as important as I am. I forget that. I forget it often. You're every bit as important as I am. my father-in-law's wishes and desires that night, as irrational as they are, seemed to me, or as important as I was. Something really hurt him and triggered him about my coming late. You know? And I just want to be thinking about that. I want to be thinking about you and not about me all the time. That's all, you know? So let's take our 10-minute and then we'll come back and we'll continue.